Welcome to the Living the Writing Life podcast. My guest today is Stephanie Helene Adkins, who writes under the name of SC Helene. Am I pronouncing your last name right, Helene?
You did it perfectly.
Oh, yay. Okay, Stephanie describes herself as a recovering nonprofit founder, a current grant writer, and the aspiring creator of a new form of reading, the Summer Snow Multimedia Serial Story, which reads like an ebook but interweaves audio, image, and film throughout the narrative. In addition, she has written a novel, edited TV spec scripts, hosted a radio show, and presented a great TEDx talk entitled World in Uproar: How Stories, Not Facts, Will Save the Day. In today's conversation, we'll be talking about taking your own advice and making time to write your own stories. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you, Nancy, so much for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Well, I think you've got a lot of really good information to share with people, and certainly your own experience will be something I think a lot of women will be able to relate to. You and I had connected when I learned about your multimedia storytelling format on social media, something we had explored back in January on my Focus on Fiction blog. But it was what you said in that interview that really led me to inviting you on my podcast. You said, "For as long as I remember, I've wanted to escape into fictional worlds, but I allowed life to take me away from that as I raised my children and supported my husband in his career." You know, I can't help thinking that that will really resonate with a lot of other women who put their own dreams on the back burner to meet other obligations. So with the benefit of hindsight, do you wish you had managed to carve out some time for your creativity sooner instead of putting it off until someday?
That is such a great question and a really hard one to ponder, because everything is opportunity cost, right? Because if I had dived deeper into my own writing projects, I wouldn't have necessarily been as available as I wanted to be to my friends and my family and to my husband. And on the same token, I can see where there are pieces of modeling that I didn't necessarily do for my own kids, especially my girls, as far as in carving away time. That's so important to share who you are and to share what's important to you, to the world. Now, you know, that said, when you look back, you think, okay, which night would I have not woken up with the kid? You know, which day would I have not spent by my husband's bedside while he was dying? I don't know, Nancy, if I shared with you that I'm a widow.
Yes, I guess you have brought that up. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. And so there was about a 4-year period in my life where my time really was centered around helping my husband in his transitioning to the next stage. And also then afterwards, navigating my children through what was obviously a really painful process. And so on one hand, yes, there are many times I wish I could go back and do more. But on the other hand, I've lived so much life in ways that I do not regret and that are fulfilling, that I feel like now at the age of 54, I have such a repository of life to pull from. And you know what? This just popped into my brain. So let me say this before, you know, we go on to further conversation about this. When I was in my early 20s, I took a writing class, one of many, at a place called The Loft here in Minneapolis. And I had an excellent writing instructor. We'd meet once a week with about 6 of us, and we would all have to share a piece of our writing. And I have always worked hard on wordsmithing. Like, I love to wordsmith, and I love to write with a really lean style. And I've had great teachers along the way to clean it up. But in my 20s, especially, I hadn't lived much life. And the life I had lived, I really hadn't analyzed. So I would come each week with these pieces that would be, you know, decently well written, but were just about nonsense. And I remember really distinctly one time the writing instructor got really frustrated with me and threw me for a loop because he took what I had brought and he threw it on the ground and he said, "Language I cannot repeat." And he said, "You are such a good writer, but you write about," and then he said, "crap," only a different word than. I remember being really wide-eyed at the time and being like, ugh. And now having lived so much of life and the ups and downs of it, I know exactly what he meant. At that time, I was writing, but I wasn't sharing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm at a point where I have lots to share, and I think I have the maturity to be more able to share it. And also, I'm not as afraid to offend people I know as I was when I was younger.
You know, and that's true, because when we're younger, especially younger writers or younger creative people, we are looking for approval. We're looking for encouragement because we don't believe in ourselves. You know, it's like we're trying to find our way in a dark space. So we need somebody else to be shining the light. And then as we get older, we have all kinds of life experiences, the good ones, the bad ones. But each one of them illuminates something for us. And then we get to the point where, you know, now with our writing, we have more courage because we know we're being authentic.
Exactly. You know,
we're writing about a particular thing. We're writing about divorce or death or loss or something, but we're not writing it from the theoretical, how would I feel if this happened to me? We're writing it from, oh yeah, yeah, this happened to me, or something very close to this happened to me. So it's easy for me to write about it in an essay or an article or give that event to a character because it's happened to us.
Absolutely. No, for sure. And I think you really hit the nail on the head. To use a cliche, which we writers, of course, want to avoid, is the piece when you said authentic and authenticity. And I think, you know, for me in my early 20s, I was more worrying about what other people thought and who I needed to be and who they wanted me to be, and less about what it means to be authentic. And now, where, you know, I mean, it's modern science, so maybe I'll live to 108, but I kind of doubt it. I'm over half my life, and this is it. It's now or never.
Yes.
I'm not going to get another opportunity to have my authentic voice have an opportunity or a chance to get out there. And I'm the biggest limiter of that more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm
you
not
know,
careful.
And that whole age thing, it can frighten us, but it can drive us. You know,
yes.
I mean, when I turned 50, which was as of the 6th of this month, 20 Ooh. Years ago, because
wow.
I turned 70. This is the year that I'm having trouble with the number, but that's a side point. But when I turned 50, you know, I know a lot of women like totally freak when they turn 50, right? And when I turned 50, my first book was published. So I was thrilled to death, right?
Absolutely.
And but at the same time, you're right, as you get older, you know, okay, if I'm going to do it, either put up or shut up, basically. Do it now, because the other thing is, you don't know how much time you have. Anything can happen.
Yes. And I am Generation X, and I've had lots of conversations with my fellow friends who are in the same generation. And I'm sure this is true for the older generations as well, but there are a lot of people I know who have cancer, have died, they're just, it feels a little bit like right now we're getting hit hard with it. And, you know, kind of going back to that first question, if I can have another 20 years, then I'm really good with the way I did it, because I feel like now I can really take all that I learned, apply it, and be so much better as a writer and so much truer to myself and truer to the experiences that I've had than I could before. But I'm telling you, Nancy, if I get on the bus tonight and I end up not seeing the light of day, then yes, let it be known I regret it. If I can get another even 15 years, then I'm all good with it. And of course, I don't know. But there is a sense of urgency that I feel that I didn't feel in the past.
You know, and I've interviewed women authors who are older than me. And, you know, I ask them always too, I say, you know, how do you feel about your writing now? Are you afraid to tackle something new? Or, you know, are you thinking, hey, why not? And it's so interesting, because they'll be like in their 80s and they'll be switching into a totally different kind of genre. And they're like, why not? Right? I mean, they don't see the number as, oh, I'm too old to do X, Y, Z. They're like, keep going. Right. So, you know, I take a lot of comfort in that and encouragement in that. It's like, I need to hear that. I need to hear to just keep going and don't worry about what your age is, or, you know, what opportunities you may have missed before. Just concentrate on what's ahead for you, what you can do ahead.
I love
so
that.
Something that really, and you brought it up when you were talking about losing your husband. I find it interesting that after you were widowed, instead of going after your own dream of writing stories, instead you started Story Arc. And that's a nonprofit that empowers, uplifts, and amplifies the voices of teenagers. Now, while it's a great venture, you know, and I'm sure you have a lot of pride in it, and I'm sure the kids certainly appreciate that you did it, why did you decide to do for others instead of doing it for Stephanie?
It's a question I continue to ask myself. I certainly, after my husband passed away, I would have had an opportunity to slow down and to begin to write. And in fact, it was my intention to do so. I even went on my own, traveled by myself for the very first time to Isle Royale. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's on the border of Canada, and it's in Lake Superior. And it is it's just an isolated island that has nature as it used to be, and people go there. And I was always just fascinated by that. And my idea was I was going to write a novel that was based in there, because I was really intrigued by you have to take a ferry to get there. And the captain of the ferry said, if you fall in, the water is so cold, you will freeze to death before you drown. And in fact, most of the fishermen do not know how to swim, because it's the moot point. If you fall in, if you don't get immediately retrieved, you're basically, you know, dead. And I, for whatever reason, was so enraptured by that. And so I have, if you looked at my computer, you know, oh gosh, I guess it's been 9 years ago now, you would see I had photos that I took. I had the beginning of an outline. I had all of these cards. And Nancy, I guess emotion stopped me. I guess the fear of really putting myself out there. I think at that point I was so vulnerable, and I have four children. And so my whole focus was on helping them navigate through this. And my youngest daughter is a storyteller as well. And so when I started the nonprofit, she was helping me with it. So it was also a way to, I didn't make money the first couple of years, let's be real, you know, but it ramped up to where it could become a job, where I was making money and doing something with my daughter. And I felt, I think in a large part, because for so much of my life, I felt my voice has been repressed, and the things I really wanted to say weren't necessarily things that different people in my life wanted to hear. And so I was adamant and passionate about other people's voices being heard and giving kids the opportunity to tell their story, whether it be through novel or podcast or film or poetry. And then it was one of those students who said, "Stephanie, you work so hard to give us the opportunity to lift up our voice. What about yours?" And it took me a couple of years, even from her saying that, to get here. But here I am. I quit the nonprofit. I'm freelance grant writing to try to bring in money while I'm trying to start a business. And it's a free fall for sure, but I don't regret it. I'm very glad to be here, even as, looking into the future, it's uncertain. But hey, I won't have the re regret that I didn't try, and it's really fun so far. Going along with the process of all of this.
And I know you had said in I think it was in an interview or something, exactly what you just said about, as a widow, I know how short and capricious life can be. I'm more afraid of regrets than poverty, which reminded me of a Mark Twain quote, 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the things you did do. But it can be scary. I mean, it can, especially as we get older, in a way, it can be a little scary to get out of our comfort zone. I mean, you had the nonprofit going, you knew what was expected of you, you were achieving the goals there, and then you decide to make a change again. And I'm asking this for all the other women who may be listening to this, all the other writers who are listening to this, who are saying, I want to shift too. I want to move too, but I don't know if I can do it. Where did you find the courage to do this?
I mean, I think at the base level, when you watch someone you love die at age 46, it really sears, or at least it seared into my brain, that we're on borrowed time and we just don't know. And for as long as I can remember, I've wanted to write and speak. Those are the two things. If I go back to my childhood, I was pretending to write stories that I would say out loud before I even knew my letters. I was pretending, I was holding a pencil and pretending it was a microphone and telling the world why it should be this kind of place instead of that kind of place. And so, to not, at this point in my life, I took so many risks on behalf of my husband's career, on behalf of my children, and launching, helping them launch into careers they really wanted to be a part of. I did all of this for everyone but myself. And it's just a constant reminder to myself, what I did for others, it's time for me to do for myself. And also, I think of it in terms of what would I want my children to do for themselves. So my friends and I always have this really mean thing we do to each other, which is when we are not doing self-care, or we are not following a dream or achieving a goal we should be achieving because we're focused on others instead of focusing on our own heart's desires. One of us will say to the other, "But what would you want Marie to do?" Mentioning their daughter or whatever. And inevitably, of course, you say, "I want my daughter to live her best life. I want her to achieve her goals. I want her to go out there and do what she feels called to do." And then you step back and you go, "Oh, wow, then I should be doing it too." And so that really drives it. And it's good to I have that side gig job. I write grants. That's how I actually get a check in the mail while I'm trying to set up the rest of my artist career. I dream of being a bartender. Don't have any bartending skills, but that's always my plan B. They'd take me, I'd be a bartender, and that's how I'd get my money. But I would rather tighten my belt and have the freedom to pursue my passion than to have a lot of money and be stuck doing what I don't want to do.
Exactly. And you know what you were saying about, you know, making time for everybody else, helping everybody else achieve their goals. I think that is a particular problem for women, because even after all these generations, it's still ingrained in us to do for others, help others, sacrifice for others. I'm not necessarily saying it's wrong. I had two kids. You know, I, when my parents were dying, that was it. My dad lived with me the last 3 years of his life. So do I regret any of the time that I devoted to them? No. But it is really hard after, when it's over, to even be able to think about doing for ourselves, because there is that little voice that's saying, oh, you're just being selfish, thinking of yourself. And, you know, and I think especially if we have daughters, we need to do that so that our daughters see that there's nothing wrong with making time for yourself, even if the time, all the time you can carve out is a half hour a day, if you're lucky, you know, because maybe they'll have kids or whatever. But I think when we learn it and then we model it for the next generation, each generation will find it easier and more acceptable and important.
Yeah, absolutely. And finding who it is in our lives we can reach out to take the baton from us temporarily so that we can have that time. And in recognizing that it's enriching to the other person to be involved in that way as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we can do it for each other. I mean, you know, what you said about your friend, you know, I mean, our women friends are so incredibly important for that, because they're going to be the ones that are going to say, yeah, but what about you? You know, what about you? What about you? Look, I'll take the kids for the afternoon so that you can go do what you need to do. I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, without our women friends, we couldn't do it, you know? Okay. I want to talk a little bit about that TEDx talk, which actually I listened to. And it's about the power of storytelling and its ability to transform the individual and its capacity to work as an agent of change within society. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose that focus for your talk?
Yeah, absolutely. Fundamentally, it's because I have always been able to see both sides of any situation. And I grew up in a conservative Christian family, and in high school and college, and then in life afterwards, very quickly developed additional lovely liberal friends. And have always surrounded myself with people who have very different opinions of the way the world should be and how it should be run, but are all universally very lovely people who I admire, oftentimes don't agree with, but who are smart people. And as the world has become more and more polarized, and as we've seen this constant slugging of facts here, facts there, but this, statistics, data, this, that, and nobody seems to hear or listen to each other. And even when they do listen, they don't, the facts are, the data doesn't mean anything to them. It doesn't tell them anything. And I absolutely believe with my whole heart that it is storytelling that helps us understand and grow in empathy with each other. And one of the things I say in that talk is that we are often taught that in order to really understand somebody's perspective, you should put yourself into their shoes. I certainly grew up with that, and that made a lot of sense to me. But when I put myself into their shoes from my worldview and my experience, I project what I believe of the world onto them. And I don't actually see them or understand them for who they really are. The only way you can actually be in somebody else's shoes is through storytelling, whether it's fiction or just really well done nonfiction, where all of a sudden you enter their world. And here's the cool stuff, like all the neuroscience stuff they've done. You actually experience it in this, your brain, the same things that would flash up if you were actually doing something are still flashing as you're reading about it, hearing about it, experiencing it. And I, especially working with Story Arc, where I met a real diverse set of students, learn so much through their stories. And when they told their stories, I could see immediately the way it opened up people's minds and helped them understand and not necessarily agree, but respect. And in this, even more so than when I gave the TEDx talk, we need stories. We need to speak story now. We need to really get around that proverbial campfire and sit and swap stories and learn about each other and understand who we are and what's important and really recognize that we all have the same color blood and we all suffer and we all laugh and we all cry and we all are really in need of friendship and connection and family, whatever family looks like. So that's why I'm just deeply passionate about that.
Have you gotten any feedback? When did you do that talk? How long ago was that?
Oh my goodness, I'm really going back. It would have been 2017, I want to say.
Okay.
It was before the pandemic.
Yeah. We tend to almost categorize everything anymore as, oh, that took place before the pandemic, that took place after.
Yes.
You know, it's so weird. What kind of feedback did you get after you did that? Because obviously, I mean, we've always had, you know, political issues and everything, but that was before it got the way it is now. So what kind of feedback did you get after your talk went, you know, live, after people were able, if they weren't there, that they could listen to it online? Did you get any feedback from people?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, you always get the nice, polite feedback where people are like, oh, yeah, that makes sense and blah, blah, blah. I think what's the more interesting feedback? And actually, I will say for me, this was the most interesting feedback, is a man who came up to me after I gave the talk and, you know, very with much passion said, but, you know, it works both ways. Stories can work for good and for ill. And I was like, oh, I know. Absolutely, they can. And that's why it's so important. I believe that all stories have the opportunity to be told, because it's in the public arena where you have the diversity of voices that you can start to find balance and kind of begin to put together all the pieces of the mosaic that make the whole narrative. But I do think that's fascinating, because absolutely you can have someone come along and tell a story that the moral is to do bad, and people will do bad if they don't reject the story outright.
Right, right, exactly. So you see storytelling, writing, as a way to connect with people and perhaps connect people with each other? Is that what you're trying to do through your multimedia work, through your writing?
Yeah, so I am really interested in showing multiple points of view and in connecting people to other people who they may not otherwise be connected with. I also see storytelling as, oh, you'll remember this reference, Calgon, take me away.
Yes.
The idea that, you know, especially right now, at the stage of life I'm at, it's just crazy. Everybody I know seems to be having something really significantly difficult, if not downright tragic, that they're dealing with. And people are just mucking through. And so I also love that stories can entertain and take us away. And so I know for me, as I began to really dive deep into writing, I'm enjoying exploring different genres and different things. Like the first multimedia piece I did was just, it's a romantic comedy with dog tips. You know, it was literally like, can I write a story that's lighthearted and will just give people a little bit of a chuckle, take them away for 7 minutes a day, and just let them smile and then go on with their life. And at the same time, if they have a dog, they'll learn great dog training tips as a part of the multimedia experience. And, you know, that because it's the first multimedia book I've put together, it was also a way to just test the multimedia. What can you do? What can't you do? It's still a test too. And now for the multimedia. So that was lighthearted, just entertaining. Yeah, you can educate if you got a dog, or if you don't have a dog. You know, you might even be able to tell somebody else a dog tip, you know, based on this story. But the next one that I'm doing is a thriller. And that actually taps into the UK gang culture and the music that they have, the drill music that they have. And it uses the multimedia as part of the clues as you're trying to figure out what's going on and what's happening. And in that particular scenario, I just was fascinated because of my travels, and I have family in England, you know, I came across this, blew me away, had no idea that there was even that. Talk about, like, sorry, I didn't turn off my watch. I'm sorry, Nancy. That was my watch. I turned
That's all right. I didn't hear it, so I don't think the audience will either.
Okay, well, good. But I mean, now with the multimedia, not only can the story, the fictional story, take you away. I mean, it's kind of a weird concept. We have fake news. We're really familiar with that. But now we have like fictional story and real links, you know? And so you experience the links as the character experiences, but then you can click on them, go outside of the book and experience them for yourself. And take, if you want to go down, you know, that rabbit hole that you can go down when you're on the internet, you can. That's your journey. That's up to you. But hopefully I'll open people's eyes up to subcultures they didn't even know were there.
That's incredible. I mean, I'm the whole multimedia thing. I mean, I'm lucky if I can make a book trailer and do it at, you know, okay, this is good enough. Hey, I never said that I was an expert at this, but, you know, I do find that really fascinating, the whole idea, because it's such an incredible immersive experience then. And, you know, instead of just relying on, as we're reading, you know, you're reading a story, so you're kind of imagining how a place looks if you've never been there, but, you know, or what it sounds like, or whatever. But now with the multimedia aspect, it really gives us a much deeper experience, you know, exciting. I mean, I it's probably not something I'm ever going to try, because it sounds like it would be beyond me, but it sounds like something I would enjoy reading, if that's the right word, reading, watching, whatever you call it.
Yeah. And I should add a really important caveat, is that I am doing this. The designer of these books is my Gen Z daughter. I think that's a really important. And it was funny in developing here's what she has said about the multimedia book, because there's times when I've said, okay, Emma, we have to give a little description of how people can use it. And she's like, Mom, it's obvious. I'm like, okay, Gen Zer, it is to you. And she's funny, because she said she thinks, you know, as the concept of a multimedia book gets out there, Gen Z is going to be like, oh, I thought that already existed, you know? And right. Then as you ratchet up the generations, you know, they'll have different experiences of it.
And you get to my generation who goes, wait, what are you even talking about? I mean, I actually had to go to your website and kind of take a look at what it was, because I couldn't wrap my head around the concept, you know. So it was, yeah, but I mean, it is certainly, you know, next level of writing, you know, because it provides everything. So I'm in awe of you, and kudos to your daughter. I don't have a Gen Z who would do those things for me, so I'm stuck just trying to do it on my own. But but you know, hey,
well, Nancy, you're doing it very well.
But you know, it's interesting too, because I think with storytelling, not only can we connect with other people who have totally different experiences from us. For me, especially as somebody who's been writing fiction my whole life, I wrote my first little story when I was in second grade. So literally for my entire life, I've been making up stories, right? But I find a lot of times, especially with my short stories, if there's something that I'm afraid of, when my parents were alive and healthy, my biggest fear was when they would get sick and die and be gone. Okay. So I found myself a lot of times writing stories about loss. May not have been the loss of a parent, but some kind of a loss. It was, I think it was my way of sort of peeking around the corner at the scary thing. And I made my character deal with it, so that, not that anything, and you know this better than anybody, not that anything prepares you to lose a person you love, but it was like, you know, I will write about it. I will try to make that boogeyman manageable. And the weird thing was, my mom died first, and 10 years later, my dad died. And I was devastated, right? I mean, because we were a very close family. And I remember I had this short story that I had written long time ago, way before either one of my parents got sick with cancer, right? And it was about a woman who was in her, I think in her 70s. I believe in her 70s. Now I can't remember. And it's appalling to think that in one of the first drafts, I called her elderly. Because now, don't you call me elderly, right? But anyways, be that as it may. But anyways, the story very, very quickly was she was an LPN, and she worked on a cancer floor. She developed bone cancer. So anybody who knows anything about bone cancer knows it's bad, and it's you don't last real long with it, right? And her dream had always been, because she never married, never had children, she would leave. I live in Ohio, so I set her here in Ohio. She would go to Florida. She wanted somewhere warm, and she would die. Okay, yes. That was her plan. And, you know, I wrote the story like way long time ago, and I had her going to St. Augustine, Fountain of Youth, the whole nine yards, right? But you could never do anything with it. I couldn't finish it, because a road trip means, if you're going to have a character do a road trip, you better have the details. Well, you know, don't say, and when I crossed into West Virginia, 10 miles in, I stopped at a rest stop, because someone's going to say there's no rest stop there, right? So after my dad passed, about 4 or 5 months later, I took the first road trip I ever took in my life alone. I mean, I've flown before, but that's different, right? This was just me in the car, and decided, well, I'll recreate her trip to get the details and get down to Florida. And that's where my son was living anyway. So it's like, all right, fine. But the really weird thing was, it was also a way for me to process my father's loss. But I almost felt like this character, who was very no nonsense, very, okay, I got bone cancer, I know what this means, no point in me fighting it or whatever. You accept it and move on to the next thing. It was like she was there in the car with me. And I was trying to channel her, this imaginary character that I created, her strength to get me through the loss of my father. I mean, if you're not a writer, you're going to think I'm wacko. But it was, you know, sometimes we write the stories that we need to read because they do so, they help us heal.
Absolutely. I think what you said is so profound, and I love that you felt her presence as you were going to Florida. I do think, I mean, of course, I write. Of course I think the characters are real. They're there. They're not necessarily like right here behind my shoulder, but they are here and they have their own personalities. And any writer will tell you, you start out, you think the character is going to be one thing. And the next thing you know, they take the story and they just run with it. And you're like, wait, wait, that makes it so much more difficult to write. Okay, come back here. And so I think you are so correct when you say that it helps us process and it helps us get through life. And I think as well as writers, we need to be thinking about our readers and that our story is also helping them process, and that it's also important to think about what I said earlier about, you know, the neurons, the same neurons that snap when you're actually doing something, snap when you're reading something. And I used to say this to the kids, because sometimes their anger that would come through their stories would be pretty brutal. And as a reader, I'd be like, whoa, whoa, wow. I can't, it's too much. It's too much. And they say, yeah, but that's the way it's got to be because that's what I think. And it's, that's great if that's what you think. But if you want to communicate with your reader, you have to do it in a way where they can absorb it.
Right.
So you want a tirade? Or do you want to actually communicate, you know? And just in what you shared with me going to Florida, it just makes my heart just feel comfort to just know that there are stories that can help you process in that way.
Yeah, and you're right. It is about communication. You know, if what we write is basically a written form of shouting at somebody, they're not going to get it. But if we try hard through our writing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, to communicate, to express, to be vulnerable, then I think not everybody, but maybe more people will be able to listen, even if they still don't agree. But we will at least, you know, like you said in your talk, at least open the door and have them say, well, I never thought about it that way. I still don't agree with you, but now I can understand a little better where you're coming from.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I have to ask you, now that you are focusing on Stephanie as opposed to everybody else, what is next on your goals list in terms of your writing? What do you want to accomplish in the next year, couple years? What's your goals? I'm a real goal person. So what are your goals?
Oh, I love it. And I appreciate it. And I just have to say, the questions that you asked me with the blog were so good for me. I felt like afterwards I needed to send you like chocolate or something and say, thank you. Thank you. This is so good to have this discipline to sit down and really ponder and think about it. I, in 2024, want to give myself permission to really explore a lot of different ways of writing. So for sure, I want to continue to go down the path with the multimedia story because I'm just fascinated with the concept of it. And I, you know, to be clear, Nancy, any business school would tell you it is never good to be first on the market with anything, because first on the market people do not make the money. It's the second on the market people who climb over your shoulders and everybody knows about it and they get all the glory and the fame and the money. So when it comes to the multimedia stories, it's not necessarily a good thing that I'm out on the forefront, but I'm so fascinated by it. Like, can you tell a story in this way? So I want to, you know, continue to get the word out about Benjamin Buster series, but also write this thriller. And then right now I am working on a pilot for a 22-minute sitcom with my daughter. And that's really fun. And that was not a story I was looking to write. It's a story that's been in my brain for a long time. And then, you know how sometimes just puzzle pieces start falling into place and the next thing you're knowing, you know, you're doing it. And that's exactly what happened. And so just today, actually, before this, I got off Zoom. My daughter's in LA. We're working on a treatment that we're going to be submitting to the Writers Guild of America before we start to write the pilot and all of that sort of thing. So obviously, you know, I want to do that. And I think right now I'm scattering seeds to see where they land. And I'm also trying to figure out, as an author, like, I already know romance is not going to be my thing. Like, that was fun. Yeah, light romantic comedy. Check, did that. Kudos to the romance writers out there. Like, you rock. You are amazing. I have so much respect for you. But I kind of want to freak myself out, which is, and in my 20s, I was working on thrillers. So I want to dive deep into that. And I think, you know, for this year, that and getting Summer Snow Publications off the ground, because I need a platform to actually, you know, it's not a Kindle. You can't sell it with Amazon. There's no place to sell this but Summer Snow right now. I mean, Nancy, I'm telling you, the odds are not in my favor, but boy, am I having fun.
Well, and that's the important thing, you know? I mean, you're realistic, but at the same time, you're enjoying it. And that's better than saying, than enumerating all the reasons why it's, why it isn't going to work, you know, economically or whatever, and then say, well, okay, then I'm not even going to try. Because why not? Okay. I mean, you have all the pieces are there. You've got your daughter who can do the Gen Z part of it. And I think you ought to go for it, you know, and the same with the thriller. My hat's off to you, because I'm a big coward. So I can't even read thrillers, let alone write them, right? So, you know, go for it. But yeah, I think you've got some really fabulous goals to pursue. I mean, this is, and I know exactly what you mean about how the pieces start falling into place, because things you might never have thought of, and it's like this, and now you stand back and you look and you go, oh, look at that, you know, this is meant to be. Okay.
Yeah. And I come from an entrepreneurial background. My dad started two different businesses. And then obviously I started a nonprofit. And one of my, and I love starting things, which is part of why I like being a writer. But one of my favorite things when you start out is it's the great void, you know, oh, I can't think of the word, but you know, it's all there stewing. It's just a melting pot of ingredients. And then out of it, things just start to emerge, and you try one thing and that's not quite it, but it leads you to this thing and to that thing. And then all of a sudden, vroom, there you are. And I love what I call the spaghetti method of ideas, which is you throw a bunch of spaghetti on the wall and whatever sticks, you know, is a cooked idea, and you go for it.
That is fascinating. And you're right. I mean, even if the first thing you try didn't work, you learn something in that process, and then you just start fixing it or moving on to the next thing. But, you know, nothing's ever wasted. You know, it's all becomes part of the bigger learning experience. And besides, it's fun, right?
Absolutely. And I really believe in paying your quote unquote tuition and sweat equity to the school of life. You know, you could be going to a university and taking a class that you would pay, I don't know, depending if it's community college or private college, anywhere from $300 to $3,000 or four. And you learn a lot doing that, But I still think just going out and doing it is the fastest lessons learned. You get burned a little bit more, but you also remember a whole lot more.
Right, exactly. Well, I always want to, or I always like to end my interviews with this question because everybody has a slightly different take on it. So my question is, how do you define success for yourself as a writer? What does writing success look like to you?
For me, writing success, and this comes out of the history that I shared about earlier in the podcast, is actually writing. Like, writers write. So that's the base requirement. But then secondly, I want to write stories that I'm proud of, that reflect my desire to be inclusive of voices, and that for just a brief moment makes people smile, think, and even take action on something as they move forward. And that to me is a story that has meaning and has lived a good life. And, you know, especially now as grant writing is my primary way of earning money, I feel very dumb to say that it is not about how much money I could earn doing it, because let's be real, nobody goes into writing for the money. I mean, I went into grant writing for the money, but that's the only reason why people go into grant writing, is for the money, to be quite frank. But nobody goes into the creative writing field if they're thinking they're going to make big bucks. Because there's very few Stephen Kings, but there's a lot of working writers.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think that's a wonderful definition of success. And, you know, it is, it's, you know, we want to be proud of what we do, and then we want it to connect with other people. And, you know, if we can achieve that, if we can open somebody's eyes, or, you know, do whatever with our writing. I mean, yes, none of us are going to turn down royalty checks, but that being said, it is, we want to be proud of what we do, you know, and if it sells, great, but I'd rather be proud of what I wrote and not make as much money than write basically garbage and have somebody pay me money for it. It's not, yeah, no, it's so, yeah, I mean, this is great. And I knew you would have a good answer because you've been through so much in your life. So you understand, you know, success is different at all different stages of our life, but it should never just be about money. Money's nice, but it can't be the beginning and end of everything.
And you know what I'm going to add on, because as I was listening to you speak, this popped into my head. I think ultimately I'd like to remember for myself and help others realize that in life, you can have both tragedy and joy at the same time. That you can experience the hardest hard, and that even in experiencing the hardest hard, sometimes that can reveal really beautiful things. And that it doesn't have to be either or, it can be both and, even when things are tough.
No,
yeah. Now I'm worried because I feel like the universe is going to throw me something and I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, Nancy, it's not true. It's not true. It can just be really, 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 really bad and depressing. And I know it can be really, really bad and depressing, but there is light. I'm going to hold on to that. There is light.
There is, yeah. And even in the worst experiences later, when we look back on them, we do see something of value. You know, I mean, we've both lost people that we love dearly. And at the same time, I would rather mourn their loss than be. And I have heard this from people I know who say, oh, thank God they're dead. I hated my parents. You know what I mean? I mean, that to me, that That would be horrible. It's like the reason why we grieve the loss of somebody is because we love them, you know? So that's a good thing, you know? I mean, everybody's going to go sometime, but at least we had that experience of loving them too, you know?
Absolutely. And it's the love that is the bright point, obviously, that really
exactly.
Makes
Well, listen, I've really enjoyed having you on the show, and I wish you continued success with this thriller. I'm not sure I would be one of your readers because I'm a coward, but I'll read anything lighter hearted. But no, I'm just, and I'm so glad that you are now writing your own story, your life story, in a sense. You're creating your own story now. So I think that will be very encouraging to other people who are holding off. Maybe they will start writing their own story too.
I hope so, because I at least believe that you only live once, so you might as well do the best you can to make the most of it.
That is absolutely true. Well, thanks again for being part of the show, and thanks to everyone who joined us here at Living the Writing Life.